Within the genres of horror and science fiction, stories, characters, arcs, and narratives are often connected by a tenuous cord. Parallels in theme, inspiration, influence. Imagine a long hallway of locked doors representing the two genres. The only way out is to open a door and
Johnny has the keys!
Johnny Has the Keys, the podcast of horror and sci-fi that shapes our lives. With your host, David Horton and Tim Smith, lifelong friends introduced and bound by their love of the genres. And now, your host,
Tim and David!
Hey, everybody out there in podcast land, you are now listening to Johnny Has the Keys, featuring me, Tim Smith, your horror aficionado, and my good friend, David Horton. Hey, David.
Hey, how are you, Tim?
Now, I'm doing well. And this week, we are coming at you with a more modern film. We've been doing some classics, and we thought we would change things up a bit. What do you think, Dave?
David. Yeah, I think it's a great idea, and I think we've picked a good one to kind of jump into modern horror, or what the new face of horror might be. So yeah, we're excited about it.
So what's been going on this week in your life, David, as far as your favorite thing?
My favorite thing? Probably my
favorite. Or least favorite.
Our least favorite. I usually talk about least favorite, but no, I will talk about favorite. Probably my favorite thing this week was I started watching the second season of Dark Matter, which is a sci-fi series on, ironically, sci-fi, and it's ironically pretty good. And I'd watched the first season last year sometime and really liked it. A neat take on the whole sci-fi kind of genre. And they came out with the second season earlier this year, but I've just had no time at all to catch up on it. So I finally did and started watching it, and I was like third episode in and suddenly saw online that the third season has just been released. So that'll be something else I can look forward to the rest of the year. It's a good series. It's cool production value, some great casting. And it's good science fiction. It's especially good for sci-fi.
I was going to say, I have to ask you this.
Yeah, even though the channel calls itself sci-fi, they don't do good sci-fi usually. So
yeah, I was going to bring it up. I am so reluctant to watch anything on that channel. I mean, I know they did Battlestar Galactica, which was kind of something unique as far as their well, let's just say it was like the diamond in their box of rhinestones.
Yeah.
I love zombies. I tried watching Z Nation. I think I got halfway through an episode. I mean, there's just nothing on Sci-Fi Network that appeals to me. So I was I just Googled Dark Matter real quick while you were talking about it, and I was wondering, what is this on? And then I went, sci-fi, oh no. So
well, it is one of the, they are doing good in doing some good acquisitions now. So they're starting to get a few series that are made by other people. They don't produce them or fund them and then kind of bring them in. You know, I've said from the beginning what I miss about sci-fi is it's not a sci-fi channel. It's a channel that wants to produce its own movies and then doesn't know what it's doing. You know, and if essentially they gave us Sharknado, so that's a good reason to get rid of this the channel altogether. But you know, I wish they would do something that's more sci-fi. I mean, I like, there's certain channels now that are becoming very dictatable. Like there's a local channel here, and it only plays. It's almost like Nickelodeon used to be. It only plays old school series. You know, the Andy Griffiths and the Mannix and Perry Mason and classic Star Trek, all the 60s series, Gilligan's Island.
And this is local to Tennessee?
Yeah, yeah. And it's really cool, and it's a neat network that does that, and that's I love that. And sci-fi to me, you know, it'd be nice to see classic science fiction on the Sci-Fi Channel rather than Crocnado versus, you know, Megalospider or whatever those terrible movies that they've put together are, or a retread of a, you know, trying to reinvent and have a new series that really isn't very good, you know, Chronicles of Shannara or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
It's bring us some classic sci-fi.
I'm more fascinated with the concept that you have a local television channel because I haven't seen that in a long time. I mean, it kind of reminds me of back in the 80s before TCG went TBS, and we had a local channel in Atlanta that was Channel 17 before it went and became a superstation. You know, and it showed old stuff like Gilligan's Island, and they had shock theater on Friday nights or whatever. And so when you mentioned that you have a local television channel, I just didn't know they existed anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they
That's
are,
awesome.
and this may be routed from somewhere else, but we only get it locally on our local. It's not a cable channel, it's a local channel. So I'm not sure if they're receiving it from somewhere else and just retransmitting it, and that's what they like or whatever. But yeah, it reminds me of when we were younger and watching television, and you had dedicated, unique shows before everybody started getting crazy and doing their niche market stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm all for sci-fi being sci-fi and only showing sci-fi, but then only show sci-fi. Don't show bad sci-fi horror mixes, and don't do all the new series that you're just gambling on or whatever. And or
And
be all inclusive or be so niche market that you're niche market.
well, and there's plenty of old sci-fi that I can't imagine is that expensive. Like, you know, Space 1999 or any of those Erwin Allen time tunnel, Land of the Giants kind of stuff. Why aren't they showing that kind of stuff?
I know.
Well, it's kind of like
That's what I
Logo doesn't
say.
show gay stuff. That's funny now that you mention it.
Yeah, I
I mean,
mean,
the only thing
so
gay Logo has is Drag Race. You know, everything else is like Golden Girls or, you know, something stupid.
Well, and I, you know, I thought the same thing because a friend of mine has the what's the horror channel? It's not called horror. I can't
There's one
remember the
called
name of it.
Shudder, but it's subscription based.
But there's a cable horror network, essentially, and all of it is torture porn and modern slashers. And I'm going, okay, that's not horror to me, but that's just me. So anyway, that was my that was my good thing of the week. What was your good thing, Tim?
Well, I have a couple actually. One big, one small, I guess. The thing that has been going on a lot here lately that I have not mentioned that I think is kind of great is this sudden renaissance of Stephen King. He is everywhere. Now, not all of it may be good, as we've heard, you know, that the Dark Tower movie is nowhere near what it should have been. And that's unfortunate because that's probably the crown, or let's say the jewel in his crown. But, you know, it has broken, you know, all kinds of records as far as being a horror, you know, a new horror movie as far as ticket sales and popularity. But then you've also got all these limited series and made for, what do you call Netflix? And it's not a network, but you know, made for Netflix or made for Hulu
Subscription service.
originals. Yeah, like they did 11/22/63 a couple of years back on Hulu, and they are now doing Mr. Mercedes on some kind of AT&T network. Some of these things, I don't even know how you get them. But the two I were going to bring up is in September and in October, Netflix has produced two original movies. The first is going to be Gerald's Game,
Yeah, I saw
which,
that.
yeah. And then in October, they're doing a short story of his from Full Dark, No Stars called 1922, starring Thomas Jane. And it is kind of a reversal of Dolores Claiborne, but a lot scarier because it's a lot more supernatural. So interesting stuff. I'm just really, I remember when we were young, when we were young,
Yeah, I remember that.
Stephen King, there was a Stephen King movie coming out almost every month and they were never any good, but at least some of the
Yeah.
stuff now is. So I'm kind of, I think it's kind of cool. He just turned 70 years old and now he's, the popular kid on the block again.
Yeah,
So.
and people mining stuff that you normally wouldn't mine, but is turning out pretty good. The previews for Gerald's Game look really cool. And I remember the book was, it was scary, it was good, it wasn't, earth-shattering, but it was still a nice, scary novel. And I think it'll make a great little one-off movie. I think that's an
Yeah, it'll
awesome
be
idea.
interesting to see how they keep it moving, considering that it's just one setting, pretty much.
I'm curious that nobody, one of these subscription services like a Netflix or an HBO or Showtime or any of that, have not approached him and done an original series that's just all King. That's an anthology. Not like the hospital one. There was that hospital one that was like, that was Stephen King, right? But it was,
Kingdom Hospital, but
yeah.
I'm about to make your dream come true because it is kind of happening. Hulu is doing Castle Rock, and it's going to be an anthology series based on his short stories. Is that what you mean?
Oh, okay. So it'll be anthology. It's not going to be like we're suddenly living in Derry and over there's Pennywise. And if you go down the street, you can, go to the
It may be a little
Emporium.
of that.
And then there's the Marston home up on the hill or whatever.
Yeah, my closest guess, and from what I've heard, is that it's gonna be existing short stories and new short stories with possible overlapping characters, and Castle Rock is the universe, so to speak. So, I mean, but they may do, a story out of Night Shift or Skeleton Crew. I'm not really certain. No one is. They have named some of the cast, but I can't think of them right now. It's all still pretty new. Oh, and J.J. Abrams is doing it.
Yeah, saw that.
Yeah,
So we'll have lots of
yeah.
lens flares and everybody be blinded, and that'll be great. Love it. Can't wait.
J.J. Abrams turns, Stephen King into modern Star Trek.
Yeah. J.J. Abrams has to reinvent everything. It's like, I'm going to do a new Star Wars movie that's going to look just like the other Star Wars
Or
movie.
you've got his gay equivalent, Ryan Murphy, who's basically doing similar stuff as well.
Oh, yeah. Right. Now,
Yeah, he's hit and
Scream
miss.
Queens, is that Ryan Murphy?
It was. I couldn't watch it. I watched a couple episodes, but yeah, it
Okay.
was.
Yeah.
And
He's
every
rough,
other
but.
season or so of Horror Story is good, and every other season of Horror Story is terrible. And it's a
Right.
lot like modern horror, where they just try to throw everything at the camera that they possibly can and see what sticks. And it's like, wait, it's too much.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we were talking about when we did the Silence episode. What happened to good drama and writing? Stop throwing CGI and blood in my face.
Yeah. Give us some stuff. I mean,
Yeah.
that's what, and I thought they had a great premise either last year or year before, the hotel one. Because that's such a cool thing. Every room could have a different, really cool story to it. And instead, they just went in really weird directions. I mean, Gaga was good in it, but.
Primarily vampirism,
Yeah.
but yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't know if that was the best way to do that. But then again, other than like Black Mirror, I think people are afraid to do anthologies now. The new Star Trek, even Discovery or whatever, says it's going to be telling compelling, lengthy story arcs. And I'm going, okay, great. None of the other series have done that. I mean, hinted at two or three in a row, sort of thing, kind of arcs, but not these long, overarching things. So,
Well, yeah, the original show just had one, and it was just two episodes.
right. Other than that, you could watch them
So.
out of order, any order. I mean, those of us who are Trekkies could still tell the difference of what season, but it didn't really matter the influence of one. But ever since Babylon 5 really started this whole arc storytelling thing, everybody's now into this, my character has to develop and change and grow and blah, blah, blah. And even in the comedies.
So I can make more money next season.
Yeah. Well, like even in the comedies, Big Bang Theory. It started out as four geeks one of them lusting after the next door neighbor. And now it's two married couples. A third couple just got engaged and their single friend, and they have baby stories and da da da. I'm going, okay, it's not the same show anymore. Yeah, I think I've said it in an earlier podcast. I love the fact that The Simpsons, you know, came out and said, no, Bart will never grow up. Homer will never change. Da, da, da. And they've been on for like, what, 25 years or something? And
yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah. And you know, South Park ended up doing the same thing. They started that going, okay, now they're in fifth grade. Now they're in sixth grade. Now they're in they're going to stop. They're going to stay the same age. They're not growing up anymore. So I prefer that myself. I like my steak done the same way. I want my shows done the same way every time. Do it the same way.
Now get out of my yard.
Well, cool. So good stuff this week and that we like and we don't like. And actually, I think we've got a really cool movie to discuss today.
Yeah, I think so too. Would you like me to introduce
it? Yes, why don't you? You this is or I could, either one. It's fine with me, you know.
I'll go ahead and start. We're going to talk about a movie called The Girl with All the Gifts. It's based on a novel by M.R. Carey that came out a couple of years back. And if you haven't read it or seen the movie, you may want to avoid this spoiler, because one of the unique elements of the movie and the book is that you don't realize what genre it is right away. Mm-hmm. It kind of surprises you. But we're going to talk about it now. It is set in sort of a post-apocalyptic zombie universe.
Yes.
Not necessarily zombie a la George Romero, Night of the Living Dead, but more or less an infected zombie, kind of along the lines of 28 Days Later or World War Z.
Yes. Yeah.
Does that give you a good grasp?
I think those are definite good keys for it, too, sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Shine, come on up again. Transit.
Hello, Dr. Caldwell.
Hello, Melanie.
Morning, class.
Good morning, Miss Justina.
Once upon a time, there was a woman. The most beautiful and amazing woman in all the world.
No! You just touched her. Watch.
No, please, don't do that. They're only children. Stop it! One day, she was attacked by a monster. But then a girl came running up and killed it. And the woman said, "You are my special girl, and I'll never let you go."
She saved me, and you're still afraid of her?
Yeah, and you should be too.
I am producing a vaccine, and she is the main ingredient.
What am I?
Hope.
That's what you are.
I just want to live. Everyone wants that.
She loves you.
The hell is this?
The world is falling apart. You can save people, Melanie. You can save everybody. Oh my God.
What did you do?
I have a question. How did you first learn about this movie?
Well, I knew the movie was being made as I was reading the book.
Okay.
I heard about the book via, it wasn't from a friend. I had to have read about it somewhere. You know me, I'm always looking for new stuff. And I read a review that basically said this debut novel is kick ass. You need to check it out. And it may have been on sale because I did it as an audiobook, so I may have just snatched it that way. Mm-hmm. I can't remember. Or it could have been that I was doing it in a reading group with all, Goodreads. But yeah, you know what? I think it was a Goodreads book club thing that turned me on to it.
Okay.
And then when I found out it was a zombie book, of course, I was hooked.
Yeah, well, I could imagine. Anything with the big Z's.
Mm-hmm. And you know me, we've had this discussion countless times that, you know, it's not zombies and gore that make good zombie stories. It's the characters and the plot and, you know, the intelligence of the film.
Yes.
And I think this one's got a lot.
I think it's a good way of putting it, actually. That's very good, the intelligence mm-hmm. of it. You know, treating it, mm-hmm. That it's not just a rampaging sort of epidemic horde thing, that there's stuff to it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And there's a place for that, too. But, you know, it far outweighs the good.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I remember catching it... catching just an image online of her with that mask on somewhere and going, oh, wow, that's creepy and weird. Why is a little girl wearing a big plastic shield on her face?
It's Baby Lecter.
Yeah, it's Baby Lecter. So that was really my encounter with it. And I had not read the book at all or knew. I honestly did not know there was a book, and I did not watch the movie until like this past week when you said, hey, watch this movie. Mm-hmm. And so I said, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. And I watched it and liked it. I do think it's a great mm-hmm. sci-fi and horror hybrid. I think it tells, I think you're so right in your initial description, was at first you don't know what is going on. And they're very clever in not hitting you on the, you know, in the mouth or spoon feeding you on what is going on. You don't even know what they refer to this disease as until, you know, a good 20, 30 minutes into the movie. And you start hearing the term hungries and everything.
Which is unique, kind of like walkers in The Walking Dead. It's like, let's come up with another name.
One of my notes is, okay, I'm just waiting for the next freaking zombie movie that freaking calls them zombies. Okay?
Yeah.
We know they're zombies.
Agreed.
It's call them zombies. But that's okay. It's okay. They call them hungries. And then actually, again, to the intelligence of the script, I started thinking later on in the movie, are the hungries only this generation? Or is that their reference to all of them? I don't know. Is it or not? Does the doctor have a different reference to the hungries than they do? Sort of thing. So that was kind of interesting. What did you think overall? I mean, if you had to give it you know, a tomato list or what tomato meter, what would you give it?
It's kind of hard. I mean, I would definitely give it like a 7 or an 8 out of 10 mm-hmm. for different reasons. Like I would probably give it a 9 as far as originality and perspective. But there's little elements that I like about it. It's very nostalgic in a way to me. With those weird plants and the pods and stuff, reminds me of like 50s sci-fi.
Mm, okay, I could say, yeah.
But it's got elements of modern horror with the Dr. Caldwell character, who is even worse in the book. When I heard Glenn Close was going to be playing her, I was like, how in the hell did they get Glenn Close to do a zombie movie? Mm-hmm. But then I thought, wow, she's great. I can't even remember if it's a woman in the book. It may be a man, but she's great regardless.
Oh yeah,
because it's a very mean character,
but she plays it very well. I mean, she plays it with such conviction, you know. Mm-hmm. The doctor has a singular purpose that she wants, and she can respect the teacher, she can respect the subject, you know, Melanie and everything else, but she has this mission that she wants to do, and it's not a megalomaniac I'm the evil scientist mission. And it's also not the typical sci-fi, I want to understand the creatures, scientist. It's a, I'm trying to save the world. And this is the key to mm-hmm. doing it, you know, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And total emotional detachment
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
as well. She just is looking at the science. She doesn't care about the subject.
Right. I like your 50s illusion. That's pretty cool because I hadn't thought of that. But, yeah, that did give me that feel when they started seeing the pods and everything. And also the fact that they do say it's a fungus. Unlike a lot of the other zombie movies where we don't know what started it, it's just there. This one actually says, right. No, it's a fungus, and it is invading and wrapping around your brain.
Right.
So that was.
And you want to know something interesting about that?
Sure.
It's based on a real life fungus.
Oh my God! Don't. Tell
that me. Only affects carpenter ants.
That only affects carpenter ants.
I am not making this up. Yeah. It apparently gets in their head, makes these little ants go crazy, and then they seek higher elevation, and stems and stuff start growing out of their head.
Nuh-uh.
I'm not kidding. I read this. I looked this up. Actually, I might can find it. We'll have to include a link.
I found this on the interwebs. It must be true.
Yeah, that's right. It must be true. It's on the internet.
That's interesting, though. So
I think I had heard about
this. So the fungus uses the ants to, like, propagate, too, because when they get higher and branches grow, I'm sure they somehow spore or spread.
Exactly.
Or
it's to germinate.
Interesting. Germinate inside an ant
mm-hmm.
body.
Kind of cool. I don't want to slow us down. I was trying to look it up because I couldn't find it.
That's okay. I mean, I think that's a cool idea. I like the fact that I like the pace of the beginning of this movie and the whole beginning with the way she has to be strapped into a wheelchair. And then we see that there's not just her. There's other subjects that are treated the same way, all children.
Mm-hmm.
You get the dichotomy of the two different teachers and their two different approaches, and also the mean, awful military guy. You never see an imposing threat or know a threat. As a matter of fact, you think the humans or the people are more threatening to these poor kids than they are until she does the scent thing or the sergeant does the scent thing and they all start freaking out except Melanie in the classroom.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, okay, so they just can't control themselves or whatever. But we never see this kind of 28 days zombie apocalypse kind of thing until later on when she's about to be autopsied and they actually literally come through the window attacking the doctor and the nurse.
Correct. And when they get outside,
I thought that was great.
It's all hell breaking loose. Yeah.
Right. Right. So I like that. I like that whole beginning and kind of descending us into this atmosphere and this dystopian kind of society without really knowing or explaining anything. So I thought that was
mm-hmm.
cool.
I like that it's a British film and that it's set near London. I thought that was kind of cool as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I really liked the female actress. I thought she was phenomenal. She was so good. And I think this was like her first movie. And as a debut, it's extremely good. There was an actress I noticed at the very beginning. I took a note on it. The black actress that is one of her guards that actually has some of the dialogue and everything else. Great, great actress. And I was sorry she, you know, got eaten so quickly because she's in The Expanse and she's really, really good in The Expanse. And that's good science fiction right there. And I was going, oh, cool. I'm so glad she's, oh, somebody just ate her neck out.
Her name is Dominique Tipper.
Yeah. And so it's like, oh, somebody just ate her face off. So I guess she won't be in the rest of it. You know. But I thought the teacher, I forget her name, Gemma or something. The teacher was really
Justineau
good.
Justineau was her name.
Yeah, Dr. Justineau.
Helen Justineau.
Good actress. Good actress who really didn't do much in Quantum of Solace, but was good in it too. Glenn Close, of course, was phenomenal. I was very intrigued by the military guy because I thought he was just going to be your typical gruff kind of guy, but they ended up giving him some heart and some humanity, and especially, you know, in his last scene,
right,
kind of thing. But they mutate. He changed a little bit as this went on. And I thought that was really good. Let's see.
Sergeant Parks was his name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the fact that he starts out being such a hard ass and such a don't get near him, let's all kill him, and several times would kill her, but then later on sees her value and actually at the end kind of sympathizes with her, understands.
Well, and she goes out on a limb for them several times. You know, when they're trapped, she's like, I can lead them away. Let me go out and things like that.
Yeah.
Because she won't get attacked, obviously, because she is somehow, you know, related to them, maybe, well, in a different generation anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked the music all the way through, because the music was all vocal, I noticed. And I think that's the first time I've ever seen that in a movie all the way through. The music was choruses of either kids or vocalists making all the kind of the South African noises and or doing the melodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was very interesting. I'd never seen that before in a movie, so I thought I liked that.
Mm-hmm. I like that, and we've already talked on this a little bit, but I like that even though it's in the zombie genre or the post-apocalyptic genre, it is, I would say, equal parts sci-fi and equal parts horror. It is definitely a hybrid movie. That I mentioned that it took place, you know, in London or outside of London, but to give it that post-apocalyptic feel, I did a little research on some trivia, and some of the aerial photography was done with drones, and it's over a ghost town at Chernobyl.
Oh, interesting.
So that they got a realistic look of some, you know, of a land that was basically destroyed and wiped out. I had the name of the town. I can't find it, but it starts with a P.
And where nature has essentially started taking over again.
Right.
Which is kind of a subtext underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's interesting. I did not know that. That was pretty good. I did like the way they shot stuff and did stuff. The whole escape with the attack happening at the same time was very well filmed and very, you know, created a great sense of action and panic and everything. And then when they finally got to the city, it went from this expansive, oh my gosh, I guess your drone shots, everything is destroyed kind of thing, to this very claustrophobic, we're trapped here kind of feeling.
Uh-huh.
So that was really cool.
Yeah.
Another thing in my notes I'd never seen before, the kind of, and maybe this was inspired by Carpenter. No, I don't know. The way they were all still.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah, that's so funny. It's very creepy that when they're dormant or there's no scent for them to chase after, that they do just kind of stand there and sway.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That got
it's so very creepy. Yeah, it's creepier than seeing them just moving around.
Yeah, it's scarier than like World War Z when, you know, they can literally climb up on top of each other and jump in a helicopter. But, you know, this whole kind of pack feral mentality, instead you have this very non-threatening, just this way and everything with some of the, you know, most of them with their eyes closed kind of thing. But you have to weave your way through that. And you know the slightest scent, noise, whatever, and they could click out of it. And then they turn into these feral, chase you, bite you things. So that was creepy. That to
very
me.
Creepy.
Yeah, and I hadn't seen that before. So that to me made it great from an originality standpoint, a great writing standpoint, but also from a horror standpoint, because it's more,
yeah,
that's scarier to me. That mood and atmosphere is always scarier to me than the jump scare.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons the movie is successful is the mythos it creates is very unique. I mean, you have things like what we just mentioned with the still zombies, but then you also have the growth everywhere and the pods, and then all of a sudden you're starting to see the zombies or whatever dead on the ground and the plant actually growing from them, which is also very, you know, body snatcher-esque or what have you, of those old plant horror films from the 50s.
Yep.
You know, definitely. And of course the plant pods reminded me of something that was on Star Trek. The, you know, just some odd shaped pointy thing, you know, that Kirk could toss around like a tribble.
Could be, yeah.
But I mean, there is a complete. I mean, they could expand on it if they ever did any. There actually is a book sequel, and but it is almost a complete mythology within the film, or at least you see the evolution. You see that it started as a fungus, it turned into feral crazy people, then it evolved into a more intelligent second generation, but then it also goes into the back into the plant, like the circle of life, and becomes airborne again, or what have you, however it started. Am I making sense?
Yeah, totally.
There's kind of a chronology of events that create a world in its own.
Yeah, and I liked that too, the fact that there were, like, as they even say in the movie, there's like three generations of this mutation in the same movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was, I thought, really cool and a unique idea, definitely, like you said. And it's circling, it's reverting back to a plant way of germinating or reproducing.
Mm-hmm.
What were there major differences between this and the novel, since I didn't read the book?
Not really. The only difference I can recall is maybe POV. Like, some chapters were the point of view of Dr. Caldwell, as well as, you know, the point of view of Helen or Sergeant Parks or Melanie. Whereas in the movie, okay, the POV is primarily Melanie.
Right.
Speaking of which, I love Melanie's intelligence, because we know they're smart, they're learning, but she's almost hyper intelligent. Like, she's picking up on things people are saying when they're unaware of her picking up on them.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
very true.
Like, she picks up on someone saying that the pods would explode with fire or heat. You know, she learned that. She went out and she made it happen.
Right.
Are you familiar with the director of the movie?
No, I was not.
His name is Colm McCarthy, and I'm not familiar with him either, but I did notice that he's done a lot of British television, including Doctor Who and Sherlock.
Yeah, I did notice in the research a little bit I did that he has done a couple of Sherlock episodes. One of my favorites, actually. Yeah. He did the one with the wedding.
Okay.
So that was good. And I think he's in line to do a Black Mirror. So
he is. He's doing the season finale of the fourth season.
Okay, great. So hopefully that'll be good, because he's got a good feel. I like the fact that the whole beginning kind of, you know, as a key, kind of reminded me of Clockwork Orange, the whole strap you to a chair and strap a thing to your forehead so you can't turn away kind of thing. I got a big Clockwork Orange vibe out of that. I start thinking, oh, wow, this is reminding me of The Wall, because, you know, all the kids are being sent to the classroom and everything and down the hallways. But his pacing works all the way through. He never gets maudlin and has a little scene where everybody has to sit around and tell their stories to each other. You know, it keeps going all the way through. And when characters make a big change, it's acknowledged and registered, but it's not played up too much. You know, when Captain Pierce finally goes, all right, here's what I need you to do. You can do this kind of thing. You spoke about Melanie. I think she's set up from the very beginning as being more intelligent. It's not just her POV. I mean, because I think I remember it starts with them, with her counting. And I'm not even sure I remember what she was counting. But like counting in the dark is how it starts.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on she counts again or does something. And she has pictures hidden that she puts out only at night when she's alone in her cell kind of thing. And like you said, she picks up on all this dialogue around her that we've even not barely picked up on, and yet she's referencing it.
Right.
So that's,
and she's trying to hide it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. And you keep trying to see this from a little girl's perspective. And not only that, layering onto it, a little girl who's never been out of that cell or out of that classroom. And that really got me in the scene when they get into the city and suddenly she's free to go look around and help them. But she starts like going in houses and looking at stuff and playing with things and being amazed at, wow, they have this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. She sees a group of children that are like herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she learns really quickly how that society works when she basically dominates their leader to protect her friends. And then she says, pretend like you're mine or whatever, you know, and we'll get out of here. And she's she's basically telling that little tribe of children, don't mess with my dinner or whatever it is she's trying to communicate.
Yeah, she's trying to become alpha male kind of thing about the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. She's becoming an alpha, and that's just more of her intelligence. And of course, we keep saying she's so intelligent. Well, it's called The Girl with All the Gifts, so it's really set up in the title.
Well, duh, I should have thought of that. That's right.
If you go to the genesis of it all, it's set up in the title, and then it's set up in the opening scenes, and it just continues to evolve throughout the entire film to where, it culminates in the end of her saying, hey, what makes your species better than mine?
Right.
Right.
And it's very clever the way they do that. First of all, yes, it's a definite Rod Serling type ending at the very, very end, I thought. But even mm-hmm. going into that with her deciding to set the fire and setting up this whole ending sequence, it's not played maliciously like the vampire, we're the top of the food chain kind of feel. It's played with this very, I don't understand, but I think this is the way it should be kind of feel to it from her perspective again, which I liked too. I thought that was really a neat way to tell the story. Walking through the house. Oh, yeah, when they first get to the first safe place and they're walking through to clear it, that reminded me so much of Walking Dead. It just had a Walking Dead feel to it. I guess because they're carrying guns and going room to room trying to look for zombies. Duh, that would make it very Walking Dead. But
right,
that's what it made me feel like. That's what gave me that feeling of that key there.
There's something about the film stock as well that reminds me of old school science fiction.
Yes, it's very monochromatic. Everything in the movie's very monochromatic in coloring. There's no even the blood is not a bright color. It's more of a dark burgundy or even black, it looks like sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So that, yeah, I had thought of that. And also to your point about the film stock itself, it's very, the lighting is very
muted.
Flat and muted all the way through it.
Yeah.
So it has this very muted mono kind of feel to it. That's a point. Oh, I have
well, and and also your point of the music being choral is almost like a muted soundtrack. So
mm-hmm.
those probably work really well together in also helping develop this mythos or this world.
Well, also hinting at tribe. And not only tribe, but a child tribe kind of thing. I thought mm-hmm. that was kind of cool, too, from a subliminal, I guess, kind of perspective. Because, I mean, hopefully if you're listening to this podcast, you've watched this movie and we're not spoiling everything for you. But at the end of it, she essentially is the alpha to this tribe of kids. And she keeps mm-hmm. Justino alive in order to help teach them and hopefully evolve a new species, she hopes. I think.
Right, and she's domesticating them because some of them are further along than others.
Mm-hmm.
In that last scene, you can tell where she's trying to calm some of the more feral ones while the other ones are already paying attention and writing or whatever it is they're doing. Listening.
Yeah. A couple of newbies mm-hmm. kind of thing. Got to put them in line sort of thing. Speaking of feral, I did, a key for me was definitely Mad Max and the feral kids.
Oh,
because
I had not thought of that.
That's what that whole tribe reminded me of. Even down to some of them had painted on war paint kind of stuff and all that. So I could definitely see that influence. It felt like that.
I got a bunch of keys if you want to start talking about keys. So,
well, just before it, I have two. I have a note that I took. It said, two lessons to learn. One, in a zombie apocalypse, don't take all of your equipment off and climb underneath a door. That's kind of stupid.
That was really stupid.
And second, same character, by the way, but second lesson to learn, if you're being approached by a tribe of something, anything, could be carpenter ants, I don't care, but a tribe of something, don't talk to them. Kill them or run away, but don't talk to them. Like, they're sneaking up on you, dude. They're sneaking up. Why are you talking to them?
Mm-hmm.
Don't walk toward them. Don't talk to them. Don't finesse it. Run away.
I think he was surrounded already, though.
Well, I'm pretty sure, yeah. But at least give me the chance,
right?
Kind of thing. I was.
You had me with the leaving the tools behind.
I know. And my radio and my belt, everything. I'll just leave it right here. No, dude, no. Anyway. Okay, keys. Because this is called Johnny Has the Keys. For me, I've just mentioned a few already. Clockwork Orange, I said. Mad Max, of course.
Yeah. Well, and considering, you know, when we talk about keys with this podcast, we should probably elaborate a little bit more for folks out there that don't have any idea That's what true. We're talking about. We're talking about yes. things that were either inspired from or inspired by this movie, or elements of the movie that are elements you've seen in other films. And, of course, we've been doing a lot of classic movies, so those can go either way. They can go further in the past or in the future. But a movie like this that's more modern, it came out, what, in 2016? It's only a year old. Mm-hmm. Most of the keys are obviously going to be reflective from the past. I mean, it hasn't inspired anything that I know of. I mentioned the obvious ones, like Night of the Living Dead, 28 Days Later, because of the zombie element or the apocalyptic element. Mm-hmm. And then I also noted the 50s sci-fi plant motif, which is kind of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Day of the Triffids type mm-hmm. thing. But did you think about something like the episode of one of your favorite television shows called Miri?
Miri from Star Trek. Yeah. Yeah. I could definitely exactly. see that because it was you almost had the feeling that all the elders were dead. And that this group mm-hmm. of survivors or a landing party was coming into this situation where only the children were in control. And wait.
Well, especially when Melanie discovers the children.
And as far as that goes.
And they have their own little thing.
And as far as that goes, Children of the Corn. You know, same thing as far as.
Oh, wow. I hadn't thought of that.
You know, coming into this not a society, but essentially this tribe that has already been set up. And you're the outsider, mostly because you're an adult. Not because you're, you know, anything else. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, and actually, Children of the Corn may be more appropriate than Miri. I mean, in Miri, it was a disease that wiped out the adults. But these kids killed the adults because they were essentially ate their ways out of them or whatever. Mm-hmm. And in Children of the Corn, they killed the adults as well. So it's probably even more closely related to Children of the Corn. And I had not even thought of that.
Yeah.
Good one, David.
Yeah, well, you know, every now and then I'll have a moment. The other key that I have is District 9. It reminded me a lot of District 9, just in the feel of the photography, that kind of monochromatic look and the kind of dystopian society feel to it. And it also could be the fact that everyone has a British accent and it has that way too, but it reminded me.
I haven't seen that movie since it came out, so I don't really remember it that well.
Very good. I mean, it was very good for Blomkamp. I mean, he one of his best, obviously his best movies, since he hasn't really done a lot since then. The few that he's done haven't mm-hmm. been very good. So
another one that I have, and probably the last one that I can think of off the top of my head, is the granddaddy of them all, I Am Legend, which, you know, has inspired so many things, including Night of the Living Dead. And the reason I say that is because the end of the novel, it's the same scenario where who's to say whether Robert Neville is better than the new version of society? You know, he's the one living in the past while evolution is predicting what the outcome's going to be. And it's the exact same ending as this film where she's mm-hmm. saying, who's to say that you're right when we're all here?
That's a good one.
So it's very I Am Legend at the end.
Omega Man, I Am Legend, that whole kind of storyline. Yeah, I can see that, definitely. Well, and by that token, it's the non-musical version of Little Shop of Horrors, because the plants win at the end.
Yeah, it is. It is. And one other thing I would mention, it's not so much a key, is that to me, if you took the plant element out of this and there were no copyright restrictions, this could easily be a sequel to 28 Days Later. Easily.
Easily. I totally agree with that.
It's the same type of zombie outbreak. It's an infection. It's set in London. Everything about it. I was like, wow, this could really just be, you know, 28 Days Later, 28 years later or something.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Mm-hmm. What did you think about the the concept they have of this transformation happening so very quickly. You know, I've been used to the classic Romero zombies where could be a day, could be whatever. 28 days made it more a few hours kind of thing. Walking Dead treats it as not immediate kind of thing. There's at least some time passage between when you die and you resurrect. But this one, I mean, literally the nurse gets bitten and like 2 minutes later, she's freaking out and biting things.
Well, you know, actually, no, 28 days later does that too.
It does?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's one scene where a guy is looking up into the rafters and a body's up there and one drop of blood goes into his eyes and he's infected almost immediately.
I'd forgotten that. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah, with it's that type of, I don't know. We call them zombies, but they're not. They're infected by, I would call them rabid for, you know, maybe okay. A better word.
Better way of saying it. Yeah.
It's like they're not dead. They're just infected and they're fast because they're not, you know, suffering rigor mortis or anything. They can chase after you.
Another 28 days key. Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's I have no problem with it because I'm used to it from other films. Yeah, you're right though. In Dawn of the Dead or something, it does take time.
I think it creates this, from a viewer standpoint, you know that they're not safe at any time. This could happen to your best friend, your army buddy, your teacher, whatever. In 2 minutes, they could turn on you if they get mm-hmm. bitten or infected or whatever. But yeah, and I also just took that note. I do like the distinction of saying that this is a more of a plague or a disease or a rabid kind of thing than it is a resurrection of the dead. So technically, to my point at the very beginning, they wouldn't be called zombies because they're not risen from the dead.
No, and the generic term in a lot of movies, not just this one, is infected, infected, okay. Instead of the dead. But I did just remember what I was going to say earlier when we were talking about Melanie's intelligence. And this is another thing I was going to bring up that I thought, you know, it's kind of like when you need some sort of defense, like, you know, with vampires, people can use crosses or stakes or holy water. In this one, they have a unique gel that they can rub on themselves that is a scent blocker.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch that? I mean,
yes.
At one point when Justineau is at Melanie's cell, she drops hers and Glenn Close finds it and knows that she's been there. And the guy at the beginning, Sergeant Parks, spits on his arm and rubs it off so that the kid can smell him.
Yep.
I thought that was interesting because I'm not sure how effective that would be. I mean, how do you get that over every inch of your body, you know?
Right. So there was that. But okay, key sequences or keys that remind me of keys, you know, them walking through these swaying, dormant hungries reminded me, too, of several scenes at times when that's happened in Walking Dead, where they've covered themselves in guts and had to walk through a zombie horde or something.
Correct, yeah.
But what made it scarier, I thought, in this was that they were not moving, that they're, pardon the pun, planted. and so you're having to weave through them without touching them, without making a lot of sound, you know, whatever. So that was kind of cool.
Very cool.
Melanie's intelligence, we keep coming back to, and I think it's important, A, because of the title, like you said, but also because she becomes our sympathetic center all the way through.
Mm-hmm. What I was going to bring up about the scent blocker is that she realizes the tribe of feral children have learned to recognize the scent of the scent blocker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she knows what's his name is in danger.
Right.
Because they will track him by the smell of the actual blocker, not the smell of his humanness.
Yeah.
So that's another thing she picks up on really quickly.
And thinking about that, that kind of subliminally like sets up the end because humans would never be safe because the one generation initially infected, they have to wear the blockers so that they don't smell them. And the third generation, this new tribe, they, if they wear the blocker, they'll find them. So it's kind of like doomsday for humans kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's you know, they're just evolving.
Yeah. Very interesting. Cool.
Only other thing I have is just a little bit on M.R. Carey, the guy that wrote the book.
Yeah.
He also is known as Mike Carey. He wrote another book called Fellside, which I've not read. And then he has a new one out called Boy on the Bridge, which is a direct sequel to this book. But he is known for writing comic books, including new incarnations of the X-Men Fantastic Four. And he wrote Hellblazer, which was turned into the movie Constantine.
Okay.
And I've not seen that, so I don't know anything about it.
Interesting.
But I think it's interesting that two of his projects have already been turned into films.
Okay.
And he's working on an adaptation of Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere, I'm assuming for a comic book, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, and I was ignorant. I didn't even know there was a book. So.
Well, and I didn't know. Yeah, I thought this was some flash in the pan, you know, author success. I didn't realize that this guy's already pretty well established. So I was kind of thrown by that when I started doing research on him.
Mm-hmm. So overall, what would you give it?
Well, I think I already did that.
Did you? 7 of 10 is what you said?
Yeah, I was saying it was around 7 or 8 out of 10.
I would think the same thing.
It's not a bad movie at all.
No, we would recommend it. It's good modern sci-fi horror hybrid, and it's got some great performances in it, definitely.
And hardly any CGI that I recognized. Did you?
A little bit of matte CGI when they were showing those big, large drone shots. There were a couple of like signage things and other stuff that I was going, that looks kind of animated.
Okay.
But I don't know. Knowing that it's Chernobyl or a city near Chernobyl, I mean, maybe it wasn't. So it could have been actual. Yeah. And good makeup. Decent makeup all the way through it. Nothing was really highlighted too much, so that worked. Yeah. I think we give it a Johnny Has the Keys.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
All right. So that'll cover us for this week, and we'll see our gentle listeners next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Johnny Has the Keys. You can learn more about us at our website, johnnyhasthekeys.com, and our Facebook page. Avoid missing shows by subscribing on iTunes and Google Play, and please, please like, rate, and review us. We're doing this for genre geeks like ourselves, and we can't continue without your support. See you next show, and don't lose your keys.